last time when, after we finished recording, you started talking about the way that things changed after Robert Gross died. And I wonder if you can talk a little bit more about the changes that you saw in the company over the years, in the as you move into the 50s, 60s, 70s. We talked about more women coming in and seem to be getting promoted once affirmative action comes in, that sort of thing. Are there other kinds of changes that you saw occur?
Well, I don't know. It seemed like after Robert Gross died, there was a widening gap between the corporation and the people. He had always seemed to keep a close contact with the people. Now, I found out from a woman, I didn't know this at the time, but that once a year he had a luncheon, I think at his home, for a number of men. Some of them were on hourly, but they were fellows that he had worked when he first owned the company and when there were just a few employees. Mm-hmm. Because after his death, Mrs. Gross wanted to have those men for luncheon. Now, I never met Mrs. Gross, but she seemed to want to continue that feeling, you know, that this is Lockheed, this is the Grosses. Mm-hmm. Well, she asked the management club to do it, and I guess the man over there thought it was too difficult to arrange. And as I heard that it never panned out, but now Mrs. Gross offered to do that. And there was a warmth. He seemed to want to keep in touch with the employees. But later, maybe it wasn't the fault of the people in the corporation. Maybe it was just that it got so big and there were all these things. They began to sell overseas and all that. Maybe that was it. I don't know. But there didn't seem to be the closeness with the corporation. And it seemed to me that the employees didn't have that... I don't know how to express it, that, but they didn't have the feeling for Lockheed that had been there.
That identification?
Yes, you know, we'll die for Lockheed. there didn't seem to be that attitude anymore.
Mm-hmm. Now, it seems like you, because you mentioned going over to LERC and then you'd mentioned a trip, it seemed like you were involved in some of those kinds of activities that the company did promote and set up.
Very few of them, but I did take that LERC trip to Europe. The LERC sponsored those, I think those were in the late 50s and early 60s for about 4 years. And I only went on one of them. Then later they had one to the Orient, I think. And different ones could go on them, but by then I was more interested in going on old bird trips with some of the other organizations, and I was going on Audubon trips. So that was the only one I went, only trip. And many of those things that they had going on at the LERC, I didn't avail myself of, because at first, you see, I was going to school at night, and then after I quit going to school at night, I had become interested in... I belong to an environmental club, the Desimont Club. I think I told you about that, and I was quite active in the Audubon Society. I had an office in that. So I just didn't, except once in a while, if I could get another woman to go with me, we'd go to the Lockheed picnic. And I felt that what the LERC was doing was fine, but I didn't feel the need for some of the things they had, like they had stamp collecting clubs, and they had target practice. I went to that one night, and they gave me my money back because I couldn't stand all that. And they had things like that that just really weren't my interest. But many of the employees were interested in them.
I want to ask you about your developing interest in nature, but first, because I think we can kind of finish up on the work part. You say in 72 that you had to have surgery.
Yes.
Now, did you have to take much time off then for that?
Let's see. I went in I didn't know I was going to have to take much time off. As a matter of fact, I had discovered along in January that I was having intermittent bleeding, and I hadn't been doing that for some time. And so I went to the doctor because my mother had died of cancer. And he said, well, as far as he could see, there was no problem. But he said he'd recommend within the next 3 months that I have a D&C. I said, how about next week? But even then, I had no idea that they were going to find anything. And it just happened that my boss was out with he had a bad cold. And so I told the other senior analyst that always sat in for him that I would not be in Monday and probably not, let's see, I think I said I wouldn't be in Monday and Tuesday and I might not be in Wednesday because I told him I was going into the hospital for some tests. I didn't tell him what it was. So anyway, then I was ready to come home. I think it was on Wednesday. I was all dressed, and a friend had come to take me, and the the head nurse or the floor supervisor, whatever she was called, I don't know, but she had charge there, said, well, I can't, says the doctor hasn't signed your release, and he's in some kind of a meeting, he'll be out, and I'm sure it's all right, and I was all ready to go, but the doctor hasn't signed your release. Well, about half an hour later, the doctor came in and told me, hated to tell me that, but that they had found some malignant tissue. You know, whenever they give you anything mm-hmm. like that and remove any tissue, they have to send it to have it analyzed. So, instead of going back to work, I undressed and got back in the bed. And then, of course, I had to call my department and tell them. And so then I didn't go back until after, I think it was the Tuesday after Easter. I was all ready to go back the Monday after Easter. And these glands swelled up, and I didn't know what for, but the doctor said, oh, dear, you know, they didn't know but what my lymph glands had. Mm. So I had to stay off an extra day while I went to another doctor. I saw several doctors during that time. But anyway, right away, he said, my doctor that had given me the D&C and whom I had been going to wanted to know if I, who I wanted to perform the surgery, because he didn't, he was a helping surgeon, but he didn't do it. And I thought, and I could only think that this woman that had ridden with me had gone, had a, she went to a woman surgeon, a woman gynecologist, and she was supposed to be extra good here in Glendale. And she is. She just retired here a few years ago. Oh, I mean, I think this last year. Mm-hmm. So I said, well, she's the only one I know of, so I guess she would be all right. Well, that was the weekend they were having a doctor's convention in San Francisco. So one of the other doctors in her group was a younger doctor, not young, but a younger mm-hmm. doctor. I don't mean he was old either, but I mean, he would have to do it. So that was all right with me. I guess I thought if he was in her her office, you know, he must be all right. So then I found out later, somebody said, well, they are very conservative. And they didn't let me, they didn't let me drive the car or do these things as often as some do. But I had so much sick leave stored up that it didn't matter. Of course, I went back to work as soon then. I think I went back in April, so you see, I was off 2 months, I mm-hmm. believe.
And what did they do in your absence? Did they have someone temporarily?
Nobody really. The fellows just kind of got along. After I was home from the hospital, not every day, but every once in a while, the fellows called me on the phone. I think this other fellow did the estimates. I don't think anybody mm-hmm. in my group, but one of these, this fellow that I said was so good. Let's see. He was on salary by then. Mm-hmm. I think he determined the pages and the hours, and then let this other fellow, as they say, tie it up. Some of those people just didn't have the confidence to tie up their estimate, but they could do the first part. Now, I don't mean, they were, some of them were very good technical people, and, this fellow was a crackerjack. I always, I didn't say so, but I just don't think I could have done the job if I hadn't had him. But he didn't have the confidence to finish it up. There again, he was always a little afraid that maybe, I don't know, but they didn't really put anybody in my place, but different ones filled in, and the fellows did call me, I know.
Now, when you went back in 72, then,
yes.
And you retired
in 77.
77. Were there any other changes over those last 5 years?
Well, only that they came in with this salary grade 5, and I got that.
Mm-hmm.
I think I got that in 74, that we got that.
And you said by that point you felt that it was that silly was to try and get other things.
Well, once in a while I thought about it, because there was that editor, and I know I could have done that, and that did pay more, but it was awfully hard on the eye. And, yes, by then I thought, why, I guess I just kind of lost my ambition.
So, you didn't take early retirement, though?
No, I didn't.
Now, you're very active now, I know, in Audubon and in environmental issues and interested in nature. It seems that interest developed, you mentioned before, in the late 50s, right about that
when
same time,
I was,
all these other...
Yeah, when I took this NS-130 down at State College.
Was that nature study?
Yeah, nature study. And see, I took that because I needed some more units. And I think I took that in 54. And then in 55, a friend of mine persuaded me to go to Audubon Camp for my vacation. And that sounded pretty good because it wasn't expensive and it would be outdoors. And so I joined the Audubon Society. And, I had always been interested. I'd always liked to go to the national park.
Mm-hmm.
But this was the first time I had ever joined any organizations for it.
And it seems like a lot of your activities now focus on...
Yes. And we also have this group here in Glendale called SWAP. It's a small wilderness area preservation. We're trying to preserve a small wilderness area or get a large urban park, an urban mountain park. And that's where this Proposition 9 comes
I
in,
see.
You see. And if that passes, we think we'll get funding, probably not full funding, but something like when you get it from a foundation, they call it a challenge grant.
Mm-hmm.
We hope to get something like that, and then we'll try to raise money to buy some of the undeveloped land up there for a park. So,
tell me what your life has been like since retirement.
Oh, it's been a bowl. Of course, I had saved a lot of things to do. Now, I belong to the American Association of University Women, and... So that last year, I put down to be a co-hostess after I retired. And then the day after I retired, this friend of mine that belongs to Soroptimus invited me, and we went to a luncheon and where they were honoring, they were all young women, you know, that had, and one of those was an engineer from Lockheed. Of course, I didn't know her because she's out at Rye Canyon. But that was nice. Then the next day, a friend said, let's go to the beach. Let's go, you know. And it just seems like there's been so much going on, what with AAUW and Audubon I think it was the following year. I know I took an office in AAUW again, and one day that was year before last, I guess. I was the community representative, and they have this Women's Resource Center down at the Y, so I was the representative from AAUW, one of them, there were three of us, on the steering committee of that, and then I did some volunteer work down there. And some of my friends said, when are you going to retire? Don't you know how to No, there's so many things to do, and I always think I can do them, and then sometimes I get too busy. But I'm just having a great time. See, all the years I worked, I mean, we could have gone out to lunch, but it wasn't the same because there was always that, you know, you have to go back to work. And I always felt that it wasn't fair for me to come back from lunch frequently, very late, even mm-hmm. though I was on salary, because I knew that if I was too late, the fellows would figure they didn't have to do too much. And we were always on a tight schedule. So, but now that's different, and I go out to lunch often, and my Lockheed retirement isn't big, it's enough mm-hmm. that for my simple taste, there's been no financial problem.
And how about health problems? Have you had any more health problems?
No, mm-hmm. no, not at all.
And most of your friends are the friends that you've made over the years through the church and through the Audubon?
Audubon, yes. Uh-huh. Although I meet new people all the time, particularly through SWAP. And they had this big thing, Women of Achievement, last mm-hmm. week. It wasn't a luncheon, but where they always choose some woman here in Glendale. And the president of our SWAP was one of the runners-up, so I went to that. And then we have this Lockheed Friendship Club that meets once in a while if I'm not too busy to go. But with AAUW and Audubon and people that I've known for a long time, I haven't found time hanging heavy on my hands at all. As a matter of fact, I'm busier sometimes than I would like to be. But
let me ask you some kind of overall questions looking backwards. Well, first, you mentioned being involved in the Women's Resource Center at the Y. What are your feelings about the women's movement?
Well, it's certainly done a lot to help women. And it has helped a lot of women that are capable, but I think it's also helped a lot of women that are not, but of course that comes with every movement. I mean, I'm sure the same thing happened with men and at any time. And I do think I'm in favor of affirmative action, but I'm not in favor of quotas, because sometimes it's just difficult to find that many people that are ready.
Mm-hmm.
And I think women should have equal rights. Women are educated now. They can handle their finances. It's ridiculous that we still have some of those old laws where a woman can't manage her property, that her husband has to. Maybe the woman's a better manager than her husband. And maybe not. But yes, I think I'm in favor of the ERA.
How about on the abortion issue? What are your feelings?
I think a woman should have a choice. I do think that women that are in good health and only have one child, there again, it's up to the woman. But I think if she's in good health and only has one child and is still married, I would think she'd go ahead and have the baby up to maybe two or three. However, I think if women don't want any children, I think that's mm-hmm. their choice too. And I don't say I'm pro-abortion, but I say I'm pro-choice.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Let me ask, looking back over, I mean, given the changes that have occurred in society, if you were a young woman starting out today, what would your plans be and how would you see your future?
Well, of course, a woman starting out today has so much more opportunity. But for the time being, for the Depression times, I look back and I think I did about as well as I could. A lot of women did better, but many didn't do as well. And some of them had a better start in life than I. Now, I don't know if you remember, Mary Louise Smith was chairman of the Republican mm-hmm. National Committee here when Ford was president. Now, I went to school with her, and she has come a long way, and I'm not trying to downgrade what she's done. I think she's done a wonderful job. But her father was the local banker, and when the Depression came, he was still able to send them through Iowa State University. I think she graduated. I lost track. So I think that she did have a better start. She didn't have to earn her way mm-hmm. through college. And I think you can't always judge what people do. I think you have to see if they make the most of the opportunities that are available.
Mm-hmm.
And while I can see that I certainly made a lot of mistakes, I can see that I could have done a lot worse.
Is there anything that you would have done differently, do you think?
Oh, I suppose. Hindsight's always better as you get older and you can see mistakes. But at the time, I couldn't see them. I probably would have, I don't know. I think a person would always do some things differently. But I'm not repining for anything mm-hmm. that I have very few regrets because... most of the time, I think I did I did the best I knew under the circumstances, mm-hmm. even though I know I made a lot of mistakes.
Mm-hmm. What, looking back over entering the workforce, going into defense work during that period, what kind of effect do you think that had on your life?
Well, I don't know. Of course, it sort of guaranteed, it gave more... security, because although a lot of them talked about that this was just temporary at Lockheed, I still thought that maybe it wouldn't be temporary. And I tried to do a good job, and I think because I did do, I think that if I hadn't done a good job in tool planning and had that recommendation from Earl Morris, that I would not have had the opportunity I had in Sparrows. They might not even have taken me in. Of course, I didn't know that at the time. I didn't know it till after I'd been in there. But this supervisor, this Earl Morris, did, who was riding with the lead woman mm-hmm. over the parts listers, gave me a very good recommendation. But then I had done some work for him, and I had been a steady worker,
mm-hmm.
and then, of course, because I'd worked in the shop, I understood some of the things these people wrote. I remember doing one thing for him once that this clerk he had on days, well, I don't know, he told me he'd had two or three girls do it, and he said, they don't seem to get the idea, so even though I wasn't a very good typist, I typed up that paper. And it was later photographed and in a little brochure they handed around. But I did understand what he was saying because I had worked in the shop.
Mm-hmm.
And so, of course, he thought that was great. And he was good. He always had a good job at Lockheed. And he was a very nice fellow. So that's the only thing that I think did give me more security at Lockheed.
Is there anything else you'd like to add that we haven't covered adequately or at all? Or?
Oh, I think we've covered quite a bit. And maybe I've talked more than I
should.
Maybe some of that stuff will have to be edited out.
Well, we'll see.